Season 2 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by RamFit. Here at RamFit, we take material destined for landfill and turn it into high-performance training gear that lasts because we believe we can have fitter people and a fitter planet. In the dynamic world of fitness equipment, our indestructible training tools made from recycled materials promises to revolutionize your workouts and deliver unmatched durability. By embracing the RamFit philosophy, you're not only enhancing your workouts, but also contributing to a more sustainable future. RamFit. Fitter people, fitter planet.
Welcome, everyone, to the Ricardo's Rules of Resilience, the podcast where we give you the tools to withstand and recover from difficult times. I'm your co-host, Coach Alton, along with Coach Ricardo. And today, you guys, we got another special guest for you guys. We got the marketing manager of DECA, Robin Leggett, in the house today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, and I can't wait to get into it. So to start off, for the viewers that may not know you, if you could give us a quick elevator pitch on who you are, what you're about, just let the people know.
So I'm Robin. I am the marketing manager for DECA, for Spartan DECA. So if you're familiar with DECA, we're a 10-zone functional fitness competitive event and test owned by Spartan, created by Spartan. And basically, if you've ever looked at the DECA Instagram, if you've ever received an email from DECA, I probably had something to do with it or a lot to do with it. So I'm a part of that core DECA team. I've also been a longtime Spartan racer myself. I was a customer before I became a team member. So I've been doing Spartan races for 9 years. And I mean, we're going to get into a lot of stuff. I could go, my elevator pitch could be long, but we can start with that.
There we go. We recently released the podcast of your boss, Yancey Culpin. Maybe you haven't listened to that one yet, but I think his elevator speech might have taken the record for the longest, because you know.
Oh, I believe it. He's known for many things, but being concise is not one of them.
Energetic.
And I think he'd be okay with me saying that. Energy is his
energetic,
number one thing.
On the ball, sure. Informative, inspiring, all those things. But hey, concise.
Yeah.
Concise didn't make the list. He's still a great guy.
It's concise, and it doesn't need to for him. And so if anyone's familiar with Yancey and DECA, basically we're kind of like two halves of a whole on the DECA team. Like, he brings the energy and the big ideas and that like true entrepreneurial mindset. I came up with this crazy thing. Let's do it right now. And I'm on the other side saying, Yancey, let's think about this for a second. Let's go through the pros and the cons and the logic. So like together, I think we balance each other incredibly well.
Yes. He has surrounded himself with his immediate inner circle of people that are very strong in the areas where he needs them to be strong. And it's what makes DECA such a great team. And why I was privileged to recently join in on it. I'm so glad that we get to have you here on the podcast with us. We've worked together when I was a DECA affiliate owning a gym. We worked together for several years because you started with DECA being the person that the affiliate would contact with details of each event, and then moved into the marketing.
Yeah. And I, you know, was really neat about that. And I loved being in that role because I really got to know all the DECA affiliates. Like, it was great to create such a relationship with everybody. And, you know, I'm a former gym owner myself. So it's like, y'all are my people and I want to see you succeed. And I want to see you change the lives of the people that you work with. And so it's really nice as someone with a fitness professional background to be able to connect with gym owners and help change lives at a greater scale than I was able to do on my own. So like kind of through y'all as a conduit. So yeah, that was really rewarding work when I was in that role as well.
That's great to hear. And I understand, hearing a little bit about your story, you weren't always the fittest person growing up, had a little bit of resilience in your childhood. So tell us, how did you go from not being one of the more athletic people to being a part of DECA, which is all based on 10 fitness zones?
So, I mean, we're going to go way back to early childhood. And you all have seen me in person. I'm a small human. I'm only 5'1". And there was a point in my life where I was even smaller. And basically, as a kid, I was really shy and I was really awkward. And I was, you know, I was the kid who had glasses at age 7, and like, they didn't make cute glasses back then. So I was kind of an outcast as a kid, you know, but if you have if you have the ugly glasses at age 7, you're not in the in crowd, as it were. And I was just kind of an outcast. And so in PE classes, I was the kid who was picked last, and I was always uncomfortable in any sort of athletic environment. Like in PE classes, basically every sport was scary to me in PE, and I was not good at anything. And so that was sort of a personality that I adopted, and then everybody around me had like embraced it as well. Robin's clumsy, Robin's awkward, Robin's not athletic, Robin's not gonna be, you know, not super active. And granted, even though those labels were, I was giving those labels to myself and they were being given to me, when I look back, you know, I was raised in the 80s where we were out running around in the neighborhood, riding bikes. I was roller skating, window to the future right there. You know, we were doing play and active stuff, but at the same time, like, that was my label. I'm not an athlete. I'm never going to be an athlete. I had an older brother who was on all the Little League teams, and we had all those pictures in our living room of him on the Little League teams and the soccer teams. I was put into youth soccer for one season, and we were like the worst team. So that just, I went with that. And then as I got into high school, like, I'd be in PE class and they'd have us trying to run a mile and I'd be hiding somewhere. Like, I had no interest in running whatsoever. Same with college. And it just, I'm like, I eventually blossomed a little bit as a performing arts kid. Like, I was an awkwardly shy kid for a very long time, but I found performing arts and I found that to be fun. And so that was kind of where I got into, was theater and choir and stuff like that. Never, ever, like, the word athlete was just unfathomable for me as something to identify as myself. So that was my whole life, and I was okay with it. Like, I was fine with it. And what changed, you're probably wondering how that changed, and it didn't change until I was almost 30. I didn't do anything athletic as a teenager or adult. I was 29 years old. I had moved to Los Angeles from Fresno, California, where I went to college. And I moved there just to live somewhere else. I had lived in Central California for 10 years and I wanted to live somewhere else. And I had a college friend who had a room in her apartment. She's like, "You want it?" And I said, "Yes." And I moved to Los Angeles. Talk about scary. Moved to Los Angeles. The only people I knew were her and my sister. That was it. And I don't know if you know or have heard, but like, Los Angeles is an incredibly intimidating place to live if you don't know anybody. Like, it's not the type of place where everybody's friendly and welcoming you with open arms. And so for the first 6 months in Los Angeles, I was miserable, just truly unhappy there. And so I decided to do something about it. And I realized I needed to meet people. So I went online, and at the time, social media did not exist. This was in 2003. There was no such thing as Facebook, Instagram as a way to connect with people. So I went to Craigslist, which in 2024 is a really weird thought that I went to Craigslist to meet people. You don't do that now, but back then you kind of did. They had a thing called Activity Partners. And I went into that section and I found an ad for a new roller derby league in Los Angeles called the LA Derby Dolls. And I was intrigued because, like I mentioned earlier, the one thing I did as a kid was roller skate in my little cul-de-sac. I roller skated around my neighborhood. I loved roller skating. And I'd heard of roller derby, which is if you're not familiar, a full contact sport on roller skates, highly aggressive. And I was intrigued by it. And so I decided to go to a practice, another act of bravery. I took myself to that first practice. And that was November 2003. And I was immediately like, this is where I need to be. This is where I belong. My people were there. It was a lot of people who were like me that weren't lifelong athletes. It was kind of like punk rock women. And I was like, this is it. And I ended up playing roller derby for 11 years. So that was my first sport, was, you know, on the verge of my 30th birthday, full contact sport on roller skates. And that was my introduction to becoming an athlete.
So, quite the transformation, and just goes to show it's never too late to get started. That's awesome to see. And for those that may not know, you do a lot of interviews where you're on the roller skates, and you've actually done a DecaFit relay with Yancey, and you were on the roller skates for that. So yeah, lots of cool content coming out of that. You using your roller skates.
Speaking.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a fun evolution that's happened in my job that once I realized I could put roller skates on at an event, it's like, why did I wait so long to do this? This is great.
People are running around this DECA Fit event for our listeners who may not have attended. It's a 250-meter lap, and you have to do two of them. And Robin will be around there skating around with roller skates with a webcam or something, or, you know, taking pictures or video of people as they run. It's pretty neat. Are you the only person to actually complete a DECA Fit in roller skates?
Probably yes. I can't. I, you know what's funny? After we did it, and we did it as a demo, it was a year ago in Anaheim. And the only reason it happened, first of all, funny story, when I was interviewing for my first role as the affiliate relations manager, Yancey knew I played roller derby. He and I knew each other before I got the job at DECA. He knew I had a history in roller derby. During the job interview, he said, if you come on board, can we do a DECA Fit with you skating? Can we do a DECA Fit Teams? And I was like, absolutely. Tell me when. And I had pretty much decided, because I live in Southern California, and so we have an event in Southern California I could drive to. I didn't have to fly with my skates. So I said, let's do it there. So it was Anaheim in 2023. I brought my skates. And we did this DECA Fit team. So it's with a DECA Fit teams, you divide and conquer the work. So I did all the running, air quotes. I did the running on skates. He did most of the zones. So he was doing the exercise zones. There was a point towards the end because you run the first and the last laps together. And I was, you know, I was on skates. So I was letting him set the pace on those laps. But he was pushing. And then he was tired when we got to the burpees, which is the very last zone. And I said, do you need me to do some of the burpees? Because I can. And he's like, okay. And I think it was the first eight on roller skates. I did the ram burpees. And I knew I could because at roller derby practice, we cross-trained all the time in skates. We did lunges. We did burpees. I never did it with a weight, with a ram before. But I'm like, how hard could it be? So I did the first eight burpees with the skates on. So I did all of the running, the two laps, the 500 meters, and eight burpees.
That's awesome. Yeah. For those who haven't seen the videos, it's shocking how straight you can keep the camera, how it's not shaking at all, considering you're on roller skates the whole time. It's pretty cool stuff to watch. You definitely got to go check that out.
Yeah, and I call myself a human gimbal because when you're skating, you're gliding. So you can actually keep it a lot more stable than if I was running. So I used to use an actual gimbal, which is a stabilizer. And I actually stopped using it because I'm like, I don't need it. I am the gimbal. I can stabilize. So the only tricky thing with doing the video on skates is the timing mats. So I have to jump every timing mat. And so, yeah, fun fact, I have to jump every timing mat, either step over it or jump over it. So I have to pay attention to where I'm going. I also have to make sure I don't crash into signs. Like there's A-frames in front of every zone. I've almost crashed into one of those because I'm watching the athlete. I'm following the athlete. I'm watching the athlete. And I sometimes almost crash into things. But I definitely don't want to trip over a timing mat. That would not be fun.
You say how hard can it be to do ram burpees? You know, like, I mean, some of us find roller skating hard enough. My father shattered his ankle in his 30s, and my nephew broke his leg badly just roller skating. There was no ram. There was no burpees involved.
Oh, yeah, no.
Just roller skating.
Roller skating, yeah. I believe my sister decided to take it up, and she went outside and fell on her tailbone, like, immediately, and that was the end of her roller skating career. No, roller skating, there's a lot, you know. The thing about roller skating is when people feel unstable, what do? Like, they stand up, and that's usually the last thing. That's the last thing you should do. You should get low. But the benefit for me is I have 11 years of experience playing a sport where people were hitting me actively while I was wearing roller skates. And granted, I had pads on, but you get pretty good at skating.
Keep
you get pretty stable and able to maneuver. And with you learn, they teach us how to take the hits, how to maneuver around the hits. So, you know, I'm at this point. I when people ask me, they're like, oh, I wish I could do this. And I'm like, or how can you do this? I would die. That's what they always tell me. And it's like, I'm more stable on wheels than I am on shoes at this point. I trip and fall trail running all the time, like just badly. But on skates, I feel at home. And that's the 11 years of roller derby. That's what that did for me. I just and maybe the childhood skating around the cul-de-sac, listening to my Beastie Boys cassettes. I always like to say that just to remind people I'm from the 80s.
Well, you were skating around at one point, hyping up a Drew Barrymore movie.
Oh, you did your research. So, yeah.
You told me the story when we were in L.A. You told me
the story. Oh, I told you the story. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We were, yeah. Well, the Drew Barrymore movie, so it's called Whip It. It came out in 2009, and it was directed by Drew Barrymore, and it was actually based on, it was adapted from a novel written by one of our skaters. And so it was based on a lot of the stories in that movie. A lot of the things that happened in that movie were things that happened to us. It was set in Texas. It was set in a different place, but the stories came from the stories of our league. There's a point in the movie where a game gets shut down by the fire marshal, and that I was there that night when we got shut down by the fire marshal. The team in the movie, the main team in the movie, is called the Hurl Scouts, and they're a Girl Scout themed team. They're based on a team called the Tough Cookies that I founded for my league. I was the first captain of that team and the first member of that team. So that's the little fun fact that I like to share. If anyone's seen that movie, that team was based on my team and I was the first member of it. And two members of my team are actually in that movie. The trainers from our league trained the skaters. I got to skate with Drew Barrymore one day. And then after, when the movie came out, they set up a promotional team and they put us in the uniforms from the movie, or the costumes that were all designed for actors that are not my size. And we went out at Comic-Con in San Diego and promoted the movie. We went out in Las Vegas and promoted the movie. So that was an exciting time. I got to go to the premiere with all the actors. Like, that was an exciting time for us. But I tell people that is the closest I'll probably ever come to seeing my life story in a movie. But it's kind of cool to be able to say this thing that was such a big part of my life is in a movie. So, yeah, there was a lot there. I mean, my years, I could do a whole podcast on my years as a roller derby skater, because there are stories just being in a roller derby league in Los Angeles with Hollywood and all that adjacent. But that could be its own episode if you guys want. But
yeah, maybe some other time we'll have you go on and tell us all the stories.
As I was saying before the interview started, I've lived several lives.
Well, I mean, that is definitely going to be lots of stories of resilience. Talk about a resilient requirement to be in. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's going to be tons of resilience and examples in there for you to share with the listeners. That might be a good idea. We might have to come back for the roller derby special.
A special thank you to this episode's sponsor, Elevate Training Grounds. They're inviting you to their DECA Strong and Mile event. It's going to have ruck, team, and kids divisions. So go check it out. The energy is going to be off the charts with prizes for people that win. I just wanted to backtrack a little bit to your story when you found out about the Roller Derby League when you were 30 and kind of feeling stuck in that spot. What would you tell people that feel in that similar way, like, oh, I'm too old to get into shape, or it's too late? What would you tell for those people about that?
Well, going back to my story, you know, I'm turning 50 this year. I look back at 30 and I'm like, I wasn't old enough. So, like, first of all, I was still a kid. But for me at that time, it was more like, you know, yeah, I wasn't into fitness. Like, for me, fitness just didn't interest me back then. So it took something to create that interest. So it wasn't even about, you know, I think a lot of people dwell on like, well, I gotta get fit, so I better go to the gym, or I better do this. And it's like, when you come into it with that mindset, how long are you gonna last in it if you're like, I should, but I don't wanna, you know? So it was interesting. I almost like, I did a unique way, because what happened was I had to be open to removing this self-imposed title on myself that I could never be an athlete. And to do that, I had to be really brave. Like, going to that first roller derby practice and just stepping into that unknown was terrifying for me. Just terrifying. Like, I didn't know who I was going to meet. I didn't know. All I knew is like, I could balance on roller skates on these cheap thrift store skates I have. But like, that's all I knew. And I didn't know if I mentioned I was not the cool kid. I was kind of an outcast. I was shy. But I had to want to try this thing enough to be brave enough to show up. So that's what it took for me to kind of cross that threshold. And then when I found that I liked doing it, I still wasn't naturally good at it. And that's just, you know, And that's always been my story. Like, I'm not a natural athlete by any means. I'm not gifted in that way. But I have this drive in me to want to be good at something. You know, I wanted to try and I wanted to be good at it. And so I just kept showing up. And I also am of a personality that if I like something, I go all in on it, for better or for worse. But and that was me in theater in high school. You know, it's like, I love this, so I'm going to put my whole energy in. Who cares about my grades? I'm going to put my whole energy into this. But I showed up and I worked really hard, and I had to work harder than some of the others. And then as time went on, I realized in order to get better at this, I need to actually work out. And so I have to cross train to get better at this. And so that created the desire to get fit. It wasn't about I should, because I have to and I'm supposed to. Like, none of those words were a part of it. It was, I'm doing this because I love this thing and I want to get better at this thing, and I want to succeed at this thing and be of service to my team, and be a good teammate and all of that stuff. So I know it's, you know, it's a very unique version of the story. But at the same time, when it comes to fitness or athleticism, I think it can start with removing labels, like stepping away from, I can't identify as an athlete. What even is an athlete? I think it's Nike's definition is, if you have a body and you use it and you move it, you're an athlete. Like, I think we create these definitions that, like, and I think a lot of people think athlete means pro athlete. Athlete means elite athlete. No, athlete can be anything. It's moving your body in an intentional way is being an athlete. So, like, kind of stepping away from those labels and stepping away from, I can't, I could never. I thought this thing looked cool, and I had to move away from the thought that I could never play a sport. I could never be good at a sport. So kind of stepping in with an open mind, you never know. If I had not shown up at that practice, my life would look very different in so many ways. I met my husband in roller derby. You know, like, I became a fitness trainer because over time I started training skaters, and I got to train beginner level skaters and see them transform and become expert level skaters over time. And teaching women like me, and a lot of them showed up in their 30s and 40s, and the last time they had put on roller skates was their third grade birthday party, and they were terrified. And I got to help them bridge that gap and see what they were capable of achieving and how empowering it is to learn skills that you never thought you could do. And I thought, you know, I was doing that as a volunteer, as a roller derby trainer and a roller skate trainer, and I realized I wanted to do that with my life. I wanted to help a greater number of people. And my whole mission in fitness was helping people discover that they are able to do things they never thought they could do because of how empowering that is. And that, for me, was the key to, like, locking in my relationship with fitness. And I knew that could be the key to helping others. It's not body shame. It's not I should diet. It's not my body should look a certain way, and it doesn't, and I hate that. It's I am able to do things I never thought possible for myself. And that feels amazing. And I want to do more of it. How can I do more of it? Strengthen my body to do more of it. So yeah, it's, I saw how transformative that was for me. And that led me to pursue a career in fitness so I could help others experience that as well.
And you know, the can'ts, you have to keep overcoming can't. That's one of Ricardo's rules of resilience. I mean, you can only tell me can't if it's followed by yet. It's the only time I allow any of my clients to use can't if it comes with yet. And it's such a key part of withstanding and recovering from difficulties, is that refusal to say can't. And the can'ts just keep coming. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's when you're young, it's, I can't do this, I've never been an athlete, but you know what?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And you know, I keep going back to roller derby, but when you spend 11 years doing something, you learn some stuff. And, you know, like I mentioned, I was not a natural athlete. I was not a star skater. Like, we had star skaters who'd spent their whole lives, like, they were like champion figure skaters growing up and just so easily adapted to the game. For me, I was comfortable on skates, but playing a sport where you're playing offense and defense at the same time, and having never played a team sport in my whole entire life, like, that broke my brain a little bit. And I never got comfortable at it. Like, I always say roller derby was the hardest thing I've ever done every single day that I did it. And as a result, you're also dealing with team dynamics where, you know, you have a game coming up and they can only roster so many people, and some people have to be benched, and sometimes it's you. And it could be, I was benched in a championship game, which was heartbreaking for me. But you have to develop some resilience if you're going to keep at it. What it created in me was fierce determination and never quit. There are other people who might have quit the whole sport at that point, but I kept on and I'm like, I'm going to show up for my team and I'll show them how valuable I am. And I'll continue to show how valuable I am. And I'm determined and I want to get better so I'm not benched next time. Or I'm not the one you can even consider benching. I want to be of that value. And so when you're spending a decade doing that, it's, you build that ability to overcome, you build that resilience. And when I eventually stepped away, and not because my body was done, it was a lot of things like commute and my life had changed. I'd become a fitness trainer and my life was now in the morning and roller derby practice was at night. And I realized it was time. But what they said about me was they admired how loyal I was, how determined I was, and I never had quit in me. And those all locked in those years in roller derby, and I've carried them in the rest of my life, whether it is future sports that I've been a part of, which became obstacle racing, Spartan racing, trail running, all of that, where I'm literally overcoming obstacles, and then realizing that in doing so, it's helping me problem solve in my life, to my work, to working in an environment like DECA, where although we are a part of the big Spartan machine, we treat ourselves like a small startup and we're scrappy and we're figuring things out as we go. And I'm in a line of work I never actually went to college for, but figured out owning a business over the years. And even the act of owning a business, it all is connected. It's all been connected. My athletic life, my fitness experience, and my work life. It is based on tenacity and resilience and determination.
Yeah, I love how you talked about, I recently read James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, and he talks about how important it is to have a reward with the habits that you're building. You kind of talked about that with having the reward of getting better for roller derbying helped you to build the habit of consistently working out. And moving a little bit past, you mentioned you no longer roller derby, had a big theme of the season is transition. So how did you handle that transition and ensure that you were staying in good shape, staying on top of all those good habits that roller derbying had helped you to develop?
So, in my later years in roller derby, first of all, I started playing roller derby in 2003. In 2010, which was around the time I got married, I had been unemployed for several years. I hadn't found my right career fit. But I had been training skaters for a while. So that's when I decided I want to transition my career, become a fitness professional. So I did research. I found UCLA Extension in my area had a fitness certificate program. I ended up getting a scholarship for that, which I saw as a sign. And I went back to school, took all those science classes that they didn't make me take as a mass communications major in my undergrad, and got my fitness certifications. So fitness, and then I played roller derby till 2014. So in those later years in roller derby, fitness, exercise, working out, and I was training people, but also it was a big part of my life. So that's when I really was like dialing in the fitness side and the cross training side. And when I stepped away from roller derby, first of all, I didn't just leave entirely, because when you do something for that long, the joke is I was never going to retire. Like, she's never leaving, because I coached for another couple of years. I hung out. So I kind of did a gradual step away. But at the same time, as I mentioned, my body wasn't done. Like, I only stepped away for sort of logistical reasons, but I knew my body wasn't done. I had to find something. So I kind of went out on a search of what's going to be the thing. I joked it would be my retirement sport. Like, what's going to be my retirement sport to keep me going? Because I knew that's what keeps me in fitness is training for an event, training for whether it was a game at that point. It was always training for the next roller derby game. But I liked feeling athletic at that point. Like, I fully identified as an athlete at that point. So I was looking for the next thing. And I think the first thing I got into was CrossFit. And I found like a women's CrossFit gym, and I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't like 100% my thing. But as I was working as a fitness trainer at that time, I was doing outdoor boot camps. We were reaching the end of the year, and I'd heard about Spartan Race from other people, but I decided I wanted to do something with my boot campers to celebrate the year, and we had a local Spartan Race. So I signed up. This was the end of 2015, signed up for a local Spartan Race with 14 of my boot campers. And we ran that race together. And at the end of it, they were like, well, that was fun. Thanks. Bye. And me and my little personality, when you like something, you go 100% all in. I was like, when is the next one? I think we found it. And what I realized is, obstacle racing, Spartan race, it kind of ticked a lot of the same like adrenaline points in my brain that roller derby did, where it's aggressive, you're crawling around, you're getting gritty, you're pushing yourself. But I got to train on my own schedule. I got to decide which races I got to do were roller derby. It's like, here's where the games are, here's when the practices are, you may or may not get to play. So this was like, I'm now in my 40s. I was 41 years old when I started doing Spartan race. Prior to that, I was running. I started getting into running, and I actually started getting running right before I got married, and then ran my first half marathon on the weekend of my 40th birthday as a celebration. But Spartan race was like, this is the thing. This feels so similar in my excitement level to roller derby. And I've learned since then that there are a lot of former roller derby skaters that do Spartan race. Like, it's not just me. So, which is really fun to see. But that I just went all in on that. So that was the transition from roller derby, was like finding that next thing that kept me lit up, that gave me a reason to train. And I never stopped training in between. I was working out all the time, but this was finally like, okay, now I did the Spartan race, was able to do some things, but I couldn't climb up a rope, couldn't go across the monkey bars. But you know what? I really, really want to. I want to learn how to do that. And that became like my sole focus. It's like, let's train so I can do these things I don't know how to do, which was basically roller derby, right? I was training to learn a sport that I didn't know how to do. But now I got a new thing where it's like everything I trained for is to get more efficient and better and develop skills I didn't have. So that was the transition. And it became that Spartan race. This year I ran my 100th Spartan race. So obviously that was a thing that I have been doing that for 9 years now. And is a big reason probably why I work for DECA is the people I met along the way as well.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And that's so key how you went from when you got done with roller derby and you had to find what the next thing is, right? What's going to keep you motivated? What's going to get you to wake up and get into the training? And I feel like that's the beautiful thing about DECA is it gives so many people, it gamifies it for the people so that it gets them in wanting to get into better shape, and you don't even realize that it's a workout because you're just having so much fun with the gamified portion of it. So that's so great to hear that you were able to implement that even when you got your roller derbying career came to an end.
You know, Coach, I was just going to say, you know, Coach, that's spoken like a college athlete right there, because while I do love DECA and have a ton of fun with it, I'm fully aware that it is a workout because it's thrashing me the whole time.
Well, yeah, and maybe that's an age thing too. It's like as you get older, it's like, oh, you feel the pain just a little bit more, but it's also more satisfying, I think, as you get older as well when you're able to do that. But and it's what I love about DECA. Like, DECA didn't exist when I started Spartan Race, or maybe I would have done it back then, especially because my boot camp, like when we were training for a Spartan Race at my boot camp, we didn't have Spartan stuff. We had boot camp stuff. So it's like that translates so well to DECA. But what I love about DECA is it provides a very similar thing to what I found in Spartan Race. It provides a start line that many people didn't think they'd ever see themselves at, and a finish line they never saw themselves crossing. But it's so much more accessible because it is movements that we all do without even realizing we do. It's not monkey bars. It's not rope climbs. But,
right.
You know, how often do we kneel down and pick something up off the ground? How often do we push a shopping cart? How often do we carry shopping bags around? It's all of that life stuff is what we're doing in DECA. People don't realize it. But that means you can do it.
That's right.
That means anyone can do it. But because we do it for time, it creates something to work towards. And it gives you just an instantly something to, you know, when you get your first DECA mark, it's like, how can I beat it? That brings you back and it keeps you engaged in it. So I love that we have something that can appeal to so many more people. And maybe those people eventually will also do Spartan Race. But I came the other way. I came Spartan Race first, then to DECA.
You know, what's really neat, Robin, is, you know, throughout your life, you have made it a point to bring others along with you, whether you're forming a roller derby team or you're done being a participant, so you go back and coach, you know, or become a gym owner and fitness professional, you're bringing others along. And even when you came into your role, as I mentioned earlier at DECA, you came into your role and you had people like me that were not familiar with the registration system and not super computer. Now, I can only speak for myself, but asking dumb questions that you'd probably answered four times before, and you're patiently bringing us all along. And that's a role that you've been in through your life. And how does that continue with you now?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I didn't start teaching or training until, you know, midway through my roller derby journey, but it just, I learned then just how rewarding it is to help other people succeed, help other people do the things that you experienced as someone who was new. And it's just as rewarding, you know, as rewarding as it is for me to accomplish, you know, get my first rope climb, it's just as rewarding to help someone else do it. Maybe even more rewarding to help someone else do it. Like, I get so lit up by that. So that's been a running theme, you know, since back then, you know, just lifting other people up. And I've done it through teaching skaters. I've done it through my own coaching in fitness, my gym that I had. So I've as a trainer and a coach, I'm a Spartan coach, and I did outdoor boot camps. I've worked in gyms. And then I opened up my own gym with my husband in 2018. And it was a small studio, and we made it an obstacle race gym because I'm like, I want to see people light up doing this. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that they can. And I brought in people that had never done Spartan races before, and I got to see their transition and got to see them improve and succeed, and how excited they'd be when they'd accomplish a skill they never thought they could do. And then moving into my first role in DECA, and even now, it's, you know, what I love, helping people change their lives through fitness. I have an extra passion for women and older women and older athletes, but I love helping people change their lives through fitness. I love seeing people experience what I got to experience. Now, I did it as a coach, one-on-one, or maybe one in a group. But through DECA, although I am not coaching people directly, except maybe you when I teach you how to stand up a registration yeah, page. But, you know, I'm not coaching the athletes. But I get to play a role in helping change lives at a way larger scale than I ever got to do on my own. And that is really cool. So when I see the gyms succeed, whether it is a successful event or hear the stories of the firsthand stories of athletes, having these, you know, inspirational stories from athletes that whose lives you had a hand in changing.
That's right.
And I know that we got to help facilitate that in some way, and I got to play a role in that. That's rewarding too.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredibly rewarding. And now I get to do it at a scale where we have, you know, almost 400 gyms doing this around the world, and just like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of athletes. And I get to see these moments myself with my own eyes at DecaFit, seeing an athlete with MS spending 8 minutes doing burpees, but doing them all herself, and how incredible that is to watch. Seeing athletes in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, like your father, watching three generations of your family compete at the same event. Like, that's that. And I've always been a mission driven person. Mm-hmm. And this mission so aligns with my own personal mission that, like, I love that although I am not the one doing the training personally, I am playing a role and helping change lives at a massive scale. And that's awesome. I love it. And then on the marketing side, what's really cool about that is I get to showcase.
Yes.
That. So, you know, now I run the Instagram account. It makes me laugh when people are like, DECA Instagram did this, or DECA Instagram didn't do this. Why aren't they publishing my story? I'm like, reach out to me. It's all me. It's 100% me. But then when they're like, oh, Instagram used my picture. And I'm like, that was also me. Like, because what I love to do, and it's like an inside story, is like, when we're doing, like, say, a 3-day countdown for a DecaFit in Florida, I will pull the registration list and I'll be like, who's coming? Do we have a picture of that person? Mm-hmm. Can I highlight that person in this event that I know they're coming to? So I try sometimes, and that means sometimes it takes me longer to do this thing that could probably take a lot less time if I just grabbed a random picture. But I love getting to highlight, you know, be somewhat deliberate in how I get to highlight people and spotlight people and make sure that I get to be diverse in who we're highlighting, that we are turning the spotlight on the full range of athletes that we have at our events, from the elites to the first timer to someone who might be 80 years old. And by the way, those posts do very, very well on Instagram. Your dad's post, it went viral.
Yeah, it really did.
The video of you and him competing did go viral. And I'm like, well, I should do more of that then, obviously. Yeah. But, you know, showcasing and unconventional athlete body type.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, you know, when you show someone who doesn't look like a typical athlete, my goal that somebody else looks at that and says, well, oh, wow, if this person's doing
why
it.
Why can't I?
You know, why can't I? Sometimes people just need to see someone that looks like how they view themselves, or, you know, it's like this person, I see myself in this person. Yeah. And therefore this thing opens up to me a little more where I might have closed it off before. So that's what I get to do on the marketing side, is play a role in like how we showcase people and who we show, and getting to talk. I get to talk to athletes at our events. I get to hear the stories. At our last event where we had an ultra, I followed people around and interviewed them and was like, tell me why you're doing this. What does DECA mean to you? And how has this changed your lives? And I get to hear these stories and share these stories. And that's rewarding on its own.
Yes, it is.
I love so much of what you said there. Going back to when you're talking about coaching, you can tell just how passionate you are about helping people and feeling that joy when you help someone accomplish something they couldn't before. And then I just love your devotion to details with making sure that everyone's represented right, because that just gives a better representation for who DECA athletes really are. It's really everyone, all shapes, sizes, forms, colors, everything. We got it all over at DECA. And just a little bit for the viewers who might want to be featured on the DECA Instagram page, what are some tips and tricks from the social media manager to get their face out there?
Okay. I mean, that's a tricky question.
Be 80 and have survived a near-death experience.
That really helps. If you've got an amazing story, please let me know about it. Yeah. Here's an interesting thing, and I don't know if not everybody's going to want to hear this, but like, at least in the visual imagery, we tend to shy away from super ripped shirtless.
Yes.
And then the only reason for that is, again, we want people to not be intimidated by DECA. DECA is truly meant to be for all. And sometimes people see that and it's like, oh, look at these this is for hardcore athletes. And we do have some amazing hardcore athletes.
Yes, we do.
But so a tip and trick for our elites is wear a shirt. You wear a shirt. Because we do want to showcase the elites. Wear a shirt. Shout out to the folks at Underdog Fitness. They're always wearing shirts. And you've probably seen a lot of them on our Instagram. And it's a lot of it's because they're wearing a shirt. Yeah. But it's not that we won't do it. And you'll see in our video recaps, you know, we showcase the whole event. Yeah. But in some of the just like static images, we don't show that very much.
Yeah.
So that's a little like inside baseball on that. But honestly, like, be yourself. Be yourself on the course. Like, I don't always, like, obviously smile for the camera if you want to, but I love candid shots. Like, I love showcasing people, like, in all the grit and the glory of DECA, like, just the realness of it. But be you, you know. But at the same time, like, if you see me on roller skates passing by and that lights you up, like, that's part of why I wear the roller skates at the events, is it's entertaining for people, and they tend to, if when I skate by them, they'll run a little faster. But but honestly, it's like, I don't know if there is a way to be featured, you know, because again, we're trying to feature all types. So just be yourself.
We were being humorous earlier, but I remember, you know, when I was owning the gym and leading the gym, you know, and speaking of Underdog, I mean, I now race for Underdog. So maybe now that I'm wearing the Underdog jersey, I'll get into there. But,
we put you in. We've got one of the most epic photos of you of all time when you still had the long hair flowing in the wind. But you always wear shirts.
Yes.
So I know we feature you.
Yeah. Oh, that photo that you used for the DECA Fit Midwest. I had people say, no offense, Ricardo, but I'm sick of looking at you. They saw the ad so many times.
Well, because I put that one in a Facebook ad.
Yeah.
So people were... if you lived within like 100 miles of Fort Wayne, Indiana, like, you were seeing that every day.
Yes,
so that's why people got sick of that one, because it was an ad.
Well, you know,
but yeah, it's
as an affiliate, I was remembering, as an affiliate owner, I mean, you do seek those stories. And so if you're part of a DECA affiliated gym, you know, let your owner know, or, you know, hey, do you, you know, let them know this lady, you know, she survived cancer and is now running DECA Fit, you know, and those type of stories have those filter up, because I know that you are passionate about the people side and about getting those stories out. So, you know, they do inspire.
I mean, those stories, they're incredibly inspiring. Yeah. And anything, you know, about overcoming life adversity or just overcoming the I can'ts of this. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought I could do something like this. And now it has changed my life. I just talked to, there was a couple in Florida. There was a proposal, a wedding proposal in Florida that unfortunately I missed because they didn't tell us in advance that it was happening. By the way, if you plan on proposing at a DecaFit event, please let us know so that we can be ready. And because those do really well on social too. But I didn't know, but I was on the other end of the room and I skated over to them and I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask you some questions. And, you know, they told me, it's like, I just, the man is like, I decided to propose at Tekka because she loves it so much. And I'm like, oh, you know, that made me so happy. So like, that's a lovely story. I know there's tons of stories of people who've had that kind of transformation that I've had where it's like, I never in a million years saw myself doing something like this. And now it has completely changed my life. And stories of people who started much older.
Yes.
To me, that is so, so important because for a number of reasons, you know, number one is just longevity and being able to move your body well at all phases of your life. You have to be able to be training. You have to strength train. You have to move your body and you have to do it all the time. When it gets older, it gets harder and you have to, it's even more important to move all the time, but also it's just so empowering and to be able to age with not just freedom of movement, but confidence.
Yes.
And of course that's valid at any age, but you know, as I embrace 50, it becomes a personal passion of mine. And I've always loved the stories of older athletes. Like, you know, I will gravitate towards that all the time. And of course I got to represent everybody on DECA, but my personal passion is older athletes. And I love the stories of older athletes.
Yeah.
And I had a podcast where I only told the stories of older athletes and, you know, it's really exciting to see that on the course personally.
Definitely.
So as we close up our time together with you, we just like to finish with maybe me and Coach didn't ask you one of the questions. We may not be the best at asking questions. So what is something that we didn't ask you that you want to let the listeners know about?
I'd actually love to share about my podcast because if you want rewarding stories, they're in there. So I was, before I got this job and while I was running my own business, I decided to start a podcast. This was back in 2017. I wanted to start a podcast. Part of it was because many moons ago, I was a radio DJ back in my 20s. I've been telling these guys, like, I've lived multiple lives. But I was a radio DJ right out of college and lived that radio life, you know, interviewing rock bands and going to concerts. I still do that, but not interview rock bands. But anyway, I had an itch to do that again, to do something like that again without overhauling my life and trying to get back into radio. So I decided to start a podcast and I mulled over what kind of podcast I would do for a long time. And I eventually landed on, I want to hear the stories of older athletes and know what makes them tick. Because we'd see the news story. It's like 85-year-old runs marathon.
Yeah.
What's your excuse? And I'm like, you just see that briefly. But I'm like, I would love to dive deeper with these people. I would love to hear more about these stories. So I created a podcast called Seasoned Athlete. And between 2017 and about when I started this job, 2022, I interviewed over 100 athletes. And the minimum age is 40. The oldest athlete I interviewed, I actually have done one interview since I got this job, and it's with a person by the name of Ernie Andrus. And I interviewed him the day before he turned 100.
Wow.
Because he was walking across the country and he ended his walk in San Diego. And it was this whole thing. And so he ended his walk by stepping into the ocean on his 100th birthday. So I went to his Airbnb the day before, sat down with him, and he's a World War II vet.
Wow.
Just fascinating. Yeah. So I got to sit and talk to him. So that's my most recent interview. And even that was a year ago. I think he just turned 101. He's still with us. But I interviewed a 93-year-old Spartan racer named Monty Montgomery. I interviewed a 96-year-old woman who runs 5Ks and started when she was older. Yeah, her name's Betty Lindberg, and she's 98 and still runs. Flo Myler, who I've seen a lot on social media lately, like, she's getting a lot of attention. She's a pole vaulter. She's in her 80s, maybe 90s now. So she does the senior games and pole vaults.
Wow.
Like, just fascinating people. And I interviewed people who have been athletes their whole lives, and I've interviewed people who started later and it completely changed their lives. And I tell you, my favorite interviews were the people in their, you know, 80s and 90s. Like, they had the best stories. Mm-hmm. And just every time I would do one of these interviews, I'd want to, like, go out for a run afterwards. Like, I just was so pumped by their stories that I would just like, I want to go to the gym. I want to run. I want to sign up for a race. Like, it's just, it's so much fun. It's just incredibly rewarding to just sit and talk to these people and get dive deep with them. So unfortunately, I just, you know, as a solo podcaster, and y'all probably know this, if you're doing your own editing, it's very time consuming. Yes. It's very time consuming. And I had an editor for a little while. And now I don't. I just don't have the bandwidth. And that's, you know, I don't say it's done forever, but it's definitely on a very extended hiatus. But the episodes exist. So it's called Seasoned Athlete. You can find it on any podcast platform. But if you're looking for a podcast with inspiring stories, and, you know, it's a DIY podcast, it's me. And a lot of the episodes are, for a while, I was doing solo episodes, just talking about fitness stuff, you know, just 20-minute episodes talking about general type fitness tips, mm-hmm. and life tips and aging athlete tips. But my whole thing is about being an ageless athlete. Mm. Like, there is no upper age limit to being an athlete. And so that's been a passion of mine for a very long time. So I got to exercise the radio muscle, and I got to talk to some really incredible people. So I definitely wanted to share about that, because I'm really proud of the work I did with that podcast. And I still want to share it with the world and let people get to know these amazing humans that I got to talk to.
I cannot wait to download the episode of the 100-year-old. I love it.
Yeah, that was it's the newest one. So that'll be an easy one to find. Ernie Andrus. And yeah, he's now 101, World War II vet. And I found out about him because I go to a run club every Monday night, and somebody brought him to our run club when he got into San Diego. I wouldn't have known anything about him, but he was brought to our run club. And when I heard the story, I said, can I sit down with you? I would love to sit down with you and really dig deep into your story. And I came to his Airbnb. His whole family sat and listened as we had our interview. And then I went the next day and watched him finish his trek. He had started running across the country, and then, you know, eventually his body required him to walk, but he was still doing it. And he has done this twice. He's done two cross-country treks. Mm-hmm. So really, really cool story. But yeah, there's some really neat things in that podcast. Somebody's ridden their bike across the country. Somebody rode a bike in the shape of a peace sign across America. Really neat people that I came into contact with and got, you know, it's just cool to be able to say I talked to these people. It's a really cool thing to have been able to do.
And it's...
And hopefully maybe do again someday.
I mean, and the inspiration and the lessons for us are going to be immense. I can't wait.
Yeah. If you want to get fired up as I did, yeah, listen to those stories. It's really cool.
We got to get Wyatt Mullinex on there when you get off hiatus.
I mean, my hiatus can end anytime. I can sit down and talk to someone anytime. I just haven't. It's like I have no mental organizational bandwidth because I put it all into DECA right now. So yeah, if y'all tell me when to sit down with them, I could do it. Very cool.
Thank you again, Robin, for your time. There's a lot of insightful information that we got from this. If people want to learn more about you, what is the best way for them to go about that?
So I'm on Instagram, and it's my first and last name, at Robin Leggett, R-O-B-I-N-L-E-G-A-T. So you can follow me on Instagram. You can see all the wacky things that I'm up to as a pushing 50 runner, obstacle racer, DECA athlete. And then, of course, DECA Instagram, although you won't see me, you'll feel me. I'm in there. So I have my fingers all over that. So at DECA.fit for DECA Instagram. And then again, Seasoned Athlete Podcast. I haven't maintained the Instagram, but it's at Seasoned Athlete, but it's on Apple Podcasts. It's on Spotify. And basically anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find it there. It's just Seasoned Athlete. So if you want to listen to that, I'd love that. So I think that more or less covers it.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely go check those things out. Definitely a lot of great content with all of those accounts. If you're interested in working with me for some DECA personalized training or with Coach Ricardo for resilience training, we'll have links in the descriptions of the video or the podcast to fill out that. Or if they're wanting to reach out to you, Coach, what's the best way to do that?
Hey, if you've heard things you like and are intrigued by with DECA, I can bring a DECA roadshow to your gym. Just get in touch with me at Coach Ricardo on Instagram or Ricardo Mullinex on Facebook. I also love to talk to schools and teams and your workplace about resilience. You can get a hold of me for that as well. Looking forward, Robin, to experiencing some more magic. We're going to be together in Florida, Lord willing, here in December for the World Championship. It's going to be some really good times. And That will mean that we will have gotten together in 4 states this year. I see you more than some of my own family members because we, in March, we were together in Tennessee and then California and Indiana, both in July and then to Florida in December. But it's just part of the DECA family that we've developed, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I think I see you more than my family members too. So, but I will be in Ocala, Florida, back in Ocala, Florida with my skates for 3 days of World Championships action. It's going to be a good time.
It really is.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to Ricardo's Rules of Resilience, the podcast where we give you the tools to withstand and recover from difficult times. Go be resilient.
Season 2 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by RamFit. Here at RamFit, we take material destined for landfill and turn it into high-performance training gear that lasts because we believe we can have fitter people and a fitter planet. In the dynamic world of fitness equipment, our indestructible training tools made from recycled materials promises to revolutionize your workouts and deliver unmatched durability. By embracing the RamFit philosophy, you're not only enhancing your workouts, but also contributing to a more sustainable future. RamFit. Fitter people, fitter planet.